Good morning. Shavua Tov.
Shavua Tov. Good morning. I think I'm the only one on right now.
Okay. How are you doing, Judy?
I'm doing great. How are you, Hanope?
I'm well as also.
Good. Thank you. I just found out my neighbors next door, five of my neighbors have COVID right now, tested positive.
Well, I'm sorry to hear that for them.
Yeah, I think one of them, the man was in the hospital 6 days and he just come out, but he's not doing very well. I just found out today, somebody said they saw it on Facebook that the whole family, five of them, have it, so.
Well, you need to be careful.
I know. I think we take it for granted.
We all need to be careful.
Yes. Yes. Well, how was your Shavuot?
Baruch Hashem, I wish I could have stayed up all night. I just didn't have it in me.
Well, I enjoyed what we had. I thought it was great. I think I stayed up till 3:30.
Baruch Hashem, I felt the light also.
Well, you had a lot of reading. You know, you had started reading for the 9 o'clock class. So I mean, that's a lot of reading you had to do. So I understood totally.
It definitely is a lot of reading, but it's the reading where the energy is.
Right. At least you got through the 24 crowns, and that was the main important thing. So
that is the important thing, knowing that the jewels are there and how to build them, and then building them, and then, you know, adorning the Shekhinah. And we did all of that.
Yes. We did what we were supposed to do, and so it was complete.
Correct.
How is y'all's weather today?
I haven't been outside. I didn't look outside. I've just been working, preparing for this class and for the classes this week.
Yeah, we've had a lot of rain. I think the last 2-3 days have been rain.
I guess everybody is feeling a little lazy today.
I guess so. I was early bird today for some reason.
Well, there's somebody. Good morning, Shavua Tov.
Sorry, we're late.
Not a problem, but we can begin now. Please join me in saying the Ana Bekoa. Ana Bekoa, Yedulat Shemincha, Tati Derura. Aleph Bet Gimel Yud Tav Tzadi. Kabel Rinat Amcha Sagbeinu Tahareinu Nora. Kufre Shayan Sintet Nun. Na Gibor Dorshe Yehudcha Kevavat Shamrem Nun Gimel Dalid Yud Kaf Shin Barchem Tacharem Rachame Sidkatcha Tamid Gamrem Betet Resh Tzadi Taf Gimel Chasin Kadosh Berov Tuvcha Nael Adata Tet Kufet Tet Nunayan Yachid Geye Lamcha Penei Zokre Kedushata Yud Gimel Lamed, Hey Zion Kuf. Shavatenu Kabel, Ushma Tziakatenu, Yodea, Salumo, Shin Kufal, Rabbi Yuta. We brought the energy of creation into our space. We will now separate between the right column and the left column energies of this creation, utilizing the 13 attributes of mercy. Adonai Yohewahe, Adonai Yohewahe, El Rachum V'chanun, Erech Apayim, V'rav Chesed V'emet, Notze Chesed La'alafim, Notze Awon Wafesha, V'chata'a V'nakei. We will now connect to the energy of certainty, utilizing a verse from the Sulam commentary on the Zohar. It comes from Parashah Yitro, Pasuk 29, and we'll start with the L'shem Yehud. L'shem Yehud kudsha barichu ishkin David hilu, urchimud hilud hilu urchimud. Le'achda l'shem yudhe bavavhe, the Yehuda shalim b'shem kol Yisrael. Limud Torah mitzvah, lasok Torah mitzvah. Vayihino am Adonai Eloheinu aleinu maasei yadeinu konenei aleinu maasei yadeinu konenehu. Rabbi Abba Amar b'kamatar tane nam dekudsha b'richu koma de'aved le'eila witata. Kolaihu kishot biovada dikshot belev lach mila bialma bial divaye barnash bedach yale yamime yaulam haga beya kalana tehakuhu ovada dikshot inun wikolait sterich. The Alma, the year 5780, our current year, has the energy of compensation. That's the revealed energy. The concealed energy is Shefa. The way we reveal the Shefa and connect it to the compensation is by studying a verse that connects to both energies. The verse we studies all come from the Tanakh, and we are studying today Ezekiel chapter 20, verse 4. Ha-tishpot yotam, ha-tishpot ben adam, et ho-avot, avotam hodiem. Will thou judge them, son of man? Will thou judge them? Cause them to know the abominations of their fathers. This is really referring to your previous lifetimes. The energy of the year 5774 was peace in the Middle East. The way we connect to this energy of peace in the Middle East is by studying one verse from the Tanakh. It's from 2 Samuel chapter 7, verse 10. Wesamti makom le'ami le'Yisrael untati v'shakan takta willo yirgaz od willo yosifu v'nei avla le'anoto Ka'asher Barishona. We will now connect to the 72 names of God and we utilize the tool of saying each letter with its root vowel out loud in sequence. Wahe, wayo, layo, sayo, te, ala, me, me, he, she, la, la, he, aka, aka, he, ta, he, zayo, ala, da, la, awa, he, he, a, yo, za, la, me, be, he, he, re, yo, he, ko, me, la, awa, ka, la, yo, la, wa, wa, pe, he, la, nu la ha yo 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 me la hey 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 wa nu ta hey hey a a yo re ta shi a hey re yo yo a wa me la ka be wa shi re yo hey wa la hey hey ka wa ko me nu da a nu yo hey a me re hey, ah, yo, yo, za. Hey, 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 me, yo, ka, wa, wa, la, yo, la, hey. Sa, a, la, re, yo, a, shi, la, me, yo, hey. Wa, hey, wa, da, nu, yo. Hey, hey, shi, a, me. Nu, nu, a, nu, yo, ta, me, be, hey, pe, wa, yo. Nu me me yo yo la hey re hey me cha re wa me be yo hey hey a nu a me hey yo da me be me nu ko a yo a he be wa re ha hey yo be me hey yo yo me wa me. We will now connect to the 72 names that were revealed by the Tzaddikim, utilizing the same tool. Wa 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 yo 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 sa be te ya a me me be shi la yo hey anu a ka me ta he he yo anu da la he wa he me a yo cha la me re hey hey yo yo he me me la wa wa ka be yo la yo wa pe nu la nu me ha yo he yo me nu hey he he wa nu yo hey, hey shi a yo re ta shi a hey, re la yo a wa me la yo he be wa he bere. Hey shi hey me ka ha wa wa la yo yo hey, sa a la re yo a la me ta hey, wa he wa da la yo he yo shi a la me. Nu he a nu wa ta me la he pe a yo. Nu ko me yo re la he be he me za re. Wa he be yo ha he a la wa me za yo. Da he be me ka ko a la a he he wa. Re la he yo yo me a he le he la yo me he me. The Tzaddikim who left this day, the eighth day of Sivan, wrote Rabbi Moshe Blau, Rabbi Yisachar Dov Goldstein, Rabbi Menachem Manish Safran, Rabbi Zalman Rotberg, Rabbi Moshe Nehemia ben Rabbi Meshulam Kahana. And as our normal pattern, since Sunday we will not be having a class, the Tzaddikim who leave the ninth day of Sivan, which starts at sundown, Rabbi Moshe ben Rabbi Naphtali Hirsch Rifkus, Rabbi Yisrael ben Rabbi Shmuel Ashkenazi of Sklov, Rabbi Yaakov Chaim ben Rabbi Yitzhak Baruch Sofer, Rabbi Moshe Asio, Rabbi Aaron ben Azriel. And the eighth verse of the Ana B'Koach we say in a whisper. Our class today can be found on the Revealed Wisdom Matrix, It's in row. Ten, the second column from the left, the column of advanced classes. The class title is 10 Luminous Emanations, recorded on the book that was edited and organized by Rabbi Ashlag. And we're going to start with the Hakdama, which is the foreword. When the landing page opens up for the 10 Luminous Emanations, it's the first link. It has been probably 7 or 8 years since I have taught the Esser Sefi wrote. The 10 Luminous Emanations is the way they translate it in English. Esser Sefi wrote literally would be the 10 Sefi wrote. This book is a commentary on the Etz Chaim, which is the teachings of the Ari, Rabbi Isaac Luria, as put down in writing by his teacher, Rabbi Chaim Vital. Rabbi Ashlag said he was a reincarnation of the Ari, and that when he read the Etz Chaim, he realized it was out of order. And so he repositioned it. He moved things around within it. And the Esser Sefirot consists of a Hakdama, which is a foreword, but I will explain that momentarily. And then it has 16 chapters. The number 16 is representing the male or letters of Hashem's name. Yud Hey Vav Hey. Yud and the Vav are the male letters, the sharing letters. In these 16 verses, or 16 sections, or 16 chapters, Rabbi Ashlag, based on the commentary of the Ari's Etz Chaim, he basically is saying, we're starting with the endless world, and we're progressing down to the physical world. And we're doing it step by step, covering different aspects as we proceed from the beginning back to the endless world down into the physical world, and understanding how they all resemble, all relate to the Tree of Life, to the Ten Sefirot. Now we're going to start with the introduction, which is called the Hakdama in Hebrew. The Hakdama in Hebrew books, generally speaking, have all of the energy of the book condensed into the foreword, condensed into the introduction. And so, when I first read this, I almost didn't understand a word. And yes, it's an English translation. But as a general rule, students of Kabbalah do not study this way. They memorize the book called the Etz Chaim. And it is sensed that if you memorize it, that eventually it will come and manifest in your body. We don't study like that. We strive to understand it. But know, as you strive to understand something, you're dealing with the intellectual. And Kabbalah is really dealing with the feelings. How do you feel about what you're reading? I had a class this morning with an individual whose expressions were very clear. I don't understand the Zohar. And my question was, do you need to understand the Zohar? And his answer was, no, I need to feel the Zohar. And when I say I don't understand it, It means I'm not understanding my feelings. With my introduction to Rabbi Ashlag's Hakdama, his introduction, let us begin. We start with a commentary by myself. Rabbi Ashlag, who is a Gilgul, a reincarnation of the Arizal, took the writings of Rabbi Chaim Vital, and he reorganized them into an easier method of learning them. The result is the Esser Sefer Sefirot. We are starting with the introduction, which is referred to as the Hakdamot in Hebrew. It actually is considered the highest study of Kabbalah by itself, the Hakdamot. We will try to do justice to this study, and I will fail. Verse 1. At the outset of my words, this is from Rabbi Ashlag, I find a great need to break an iron wall that has been separating the children of Israel, which is us, from the wisdom of Kabbalah. Since the ruin of the temple to this generation, it lies heavily on us and arouses fear of being forgotten from Israel. This was written in the 1930s, with all of the chaos associated with the Depression. It was written in a period by Rabbi Ashlag, who had been given permission to open up a yeshiva to study the Zohar, because no one was studying it. Today, you can go on the internet and find all kinds of commentary about the Zohar. Some of the commentary is good, some of it is not. But this is the world that we live in, the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And we've discussed briefly that in 1990, when the internet was revealed, created, it was decided. Reference that this was the tree of knowledge, good and evil. And so we have the evil within the internet, social networking is just part of that, but that's also a good. As you develop friends around the world, people become unified. As you find sites of porn, God forbid, you're finding the tree of knowledge evil. But all the words of true Torah that are on the internet are the tree of knowledge good. Let's continue to read. However, when I begin to speak to anyone about this study, his first question is, why should I know how many angels are in the sky and what their names are? Can I keep the whole Torah in all its details and intricacies without this knowledge? Now, if I were to ask you these questions, how would you answer them? As a student of Kabbalah, is it necessary for you to know how many angels are in the sky? Is it necessary for you to know their names? Can you keep all of the mitzvot, all 613 mitzvot, without knowing the number of angels in the sky, without knowing the Kabbalah, without knowing their names? I hope you would answer, no, you cannot, because the Kabbalah, the Sod, the secrets are very much necessary to learn in order to understand the stories, the Peshat level, the simple level of the Torah, of the Tanakh. Second, he will ask, the student will ask, or the potential student. The sages have already determined that one must first fill one's belly with Mishnah and Gemara. Thus, how can one deceive himself that he has already completed the whole of the revealed Torah and lacks only the wisdom of the hidden? As a student of Kabbalah, how would you answer this question? I couldn't answer it, but I was sitting schmoozing with a friend that we were both learning Kabbalah right at the beginning. This was back in 1992 or 3. And my friend and I were sitting in a kosher restaurant. Both of us were secular, beginning the process. And so we found ourselves together one time or a few times in a kosher restaurant. And we would be talking and being the new students and not realizing that the energy of the Hebrew words we use elevates our voices. One of the rabbis, one of the black hats, we can say, came over and introduced himself that he was from out of town, but he had overheard our conversation. And he felt it was important that he made clear to us that in order to study what we were studying, we needed to have a background in the Gemara, in the Mishnah, in the Torah itself. I didn't know how to respond, but my friend did. He said, "Rabbi, with all due respect, you're absolutely correct. I know what you say is correct. It comes from the sages. It is how to study Torah. But I have done the Mishnah and the Gemara for my last 300 lifetimes. And I'm ready for this." The rabbi did not know how to respond, and he just walked away. But I have been thinking about that response for many, many years, almost 26 or 28 years now. And I don't yet understand it. The depth, the breadth, the wisdom expressed in that statement. Third, he is afraid that he will turn sour because of this engagement. This is because there have already been incidents of deviation from the path of Torah because of engagement in Kabbalah. Hence, why do I need this trouble? Who is so foolish as to place himself in danger for no reason? How would you answer the question? As a student of Kabbalah, I don't expect you to answer these questions. I expect you to think about them. And as you read the Hakdamah with me, you're going to receive answers. Maybe these answers are correct for you. Maybe you'll have different answers. My teachers and I teach that everyone should study the Zohar. But there are many groups who say, no, you need to study other commentaries of the secrets before you study the Zohar. The Zohar is direct energy, direct light, and you're not pure enough for direct light. I can't argue with them because I know I'm not pure. But I do trust my teachers. But even if you don't have an answer, does not mean you should not study what we are studying. Because the process of this study will be your purification. And as we have read in the Zohar, the way to eliminate the Armageddon war is by studying the Zohar. And no, you will not understand all of the Zohar, but you will feel all of the Zohar. Bezrat Hashem, only with the help of Hashem. The fourth, even those who favor this study permit it only to holy ones, servants of the Creator, and not all who wish to take the Lord may come and take. What is being said here? Everyone who wants to study the Kabbalah, not all of them stay to study it. Some feel the energy and continue to stay. They continue to struggle to understand. But not everyone does. During my transition from the Kabbalah Center to my travels, one of the places I found was a wonderful minyan, and I joined it. A minyan that was composed of rabbinical students from the Reform movement and rabbinical students from the conservative movement. And there was no rabbi, there was only lay-led prayer and study. And one of the participants, one of the founders of this minyan, was a teacher in the conservative school to these rabbis, these student rabbis. And what he taught was Talmud. And he was very significantly aware of the Talmud. And he still writes today a blog that's well worth reading, because he's coming from the frame of the Talmud, which is the frame of how do you do a mitzvah? How do you do each mitzvah? How do you do the principles of Judaism? And he and I had many discussions. And one of those discussions, or a few of those discussions, centered around the fact that in his, what he considered his youth, at the time I was in my 50s, he was in his late 30s, early 40s, and he described his youth as his 20s. And he said that he tried to study the Zohar and could not understand it and dropped it. And to this day, he has not picked it up to my knowledge. He was not able to study the Zohar. Why? Because he was trying to connect to the Zohar intellectually, because that's what he was taught. That is how he learned. It's the same way I learned. So why did I struggle through the Zohar? Why did I connect to the Zohar? And he did not. We each have our own path. I consider him much wiser than I, much more knowledgeable than I. And to this day, I don't know why he's not able to study the Zohar. The fifth, and most importantly, there is a conduct in our midst that, when in doubt, keep this. Do as the people do. And my eyes see that all those who study Torah in my generation are of one mind and refrain from studying the hidden. Moreover, they advise those who ask them that it is undoubtedly preferable to study a page of Gemara instead of this engagement. My commentary. By Ashlag is asking the question, why do people study the hidden, concealed Torah for the last 2,000 years? Why don't they not study it? They study the Gemara, which is the revealed Torah. Yes, it's the oral Torah, but it's been written down. And when it was written down, it solidified. It's very difficult to change a tradition. Why? Because that tradition has been solidified. If you understand the meaning of that word as it applies to Torah, the Mashiach has not come through the study of the Gemara. This is one of the answers that Rabbi Ashlag is asked, the question that Rabbi Ashlag is asking. Why study the hidden? Why don't you study the Gemara? And the answer Rabbi Ashlag is giving, the Mashiach has not come through the study of the Gemara. And Rabbi Philip Berg suggests, why not try this study of the hidden? The other method has not been successful for 2,000 years. I'm continuing in my commentary. Rabbi Ashlag is giving the typical answers to the questions surrounding the study of the concealed Torah. He will eventually answer these questions and the blockages erected by the people to not study the Zohar. You will eventually find the answers that you will need to answer your friends when they ask these questions in the ways that they asked them. We will notice as we study, not yet, of course, that Rabbi Ashlag uses a roundabout logical discourse to answer these blockages. But this roundabout logical discourse is not feelings. So why is he answering this way? And how am I supposed to understand Rabbi Ashlag's approach to others that we will study and have been studying that are more connected to the feelings of the Zohar, not the head, the logic of the Zohar? Rabbi Berg suggests, try it. Logical methods have not been successful to bring Mashiach. Maybe the feeling method will. Let us move on and start to address these subjects. Number two. Indeed, if we set our hearts to answer but one very famous question, I am certain that all these questions and doubts will vanish from the horizon, and you will look unto their place to find them gone. This indignant question is a question that the whole world asks, namely, what is the meaning of my life? In other words, these numbered years of our life that cost us so heavily, and the numerous pains and torments that we suffer for them, to complete them to the fullest. Who is it who enjoys them? Or even more precisely, whom do I delight? It is indeed true that historians have grown weary contemplating it, particularly in our generation. No one even wishes to consider it, Yet the question stands as bitterly and as vehemently as ever. Sometimes it meets us uninvited. It pecks at our minds and humiliates us to the ground before we find the famous ploy of flowing mindlessly in the currents of life, as we always will. My commentary. The only true answer to the question, what is the meaning of my life, can only come from the study of Kabbalah. This is my opinion. This is the opinion of my teachers. The study of Kabbalah, the study of the concealed Torah, is the only way to answer what is the meaning of my life. And when you ask the question, Kabbalah is the only answer that you will find that starts you on the path to find it. He is telling us if we ignore the objections, we will find the answer to this question and also blow these objections away, since they all stem from the negative system. Now, I could expound upon that paragraph for a few hours, and we never have the time. But I am going to stop briefly. How do I see the negative system in these very logical questions? Number one, do you really need to know the names of the angels or know how to count them? How is that from the negative system? Isn't that a valid objection? What is a human being's most central, sincerest desire? We are taught, and if you search within your heart, you will know your most central desire, your strongest desire, is to become closer to Hashem. So when someone says, why do I need to know the names? Where is that coming from? It's coming from the Satan. It's coming from Satan, who's saying, my job is to lengthen your process. It should take you longer than necessary to find the meaning of your life. And if I keep you from studying the secrets of the Torah by having you ask the question, why do I need to know the names, and why do I need to count the angels? All I'm doing is delaying your getting closer to Hashem by finding the answer to that central question. What is the meaning of your life? And the same applies to each of the other three questions that were asked by Rabbi Ashlag. They all come from the Satan trying to slow you down from studying the tools that will bring you to know how to get closer to Hashem, which is the study of Kabbalah. Number three, and this is the most important thing I have ever read. Indeed, it is to resolve this great riddle that the verse writes, "Taste and see that the Lord is good." Those who keep the Torah and mitzvot correctly are the ones who taste the taste of life. They are the ones who see and testify that the Lord is good. As our sages say, that he created the worlds to do good to his creations, since it is the conduct of the good to do good. Yet those who have not yet tasted the taste of life in keeping Torah and mitzvot cannot feel and understand that the Lord is good. As our sages say, when the Creator created us, his sole purpose was to benefit us. Hence, we have no other counsel but to keep the Torah and mitzvot correctly. I have said this is the most important thing I've ever read. Taste and see Hashem is good. How can I explain this to you? I can't, because you have to taste. The Kabbalah that is taught in the Kabbalah Center is referred to as Ta'ame Torah. Ta'ame Torah means the taste of Torah. When you read the stories, honestly, the stories in Bereshit, in Bamidbar, even in Leviticus and Exodus, these stories do not make sense. Why? Well, sense is coming from my head. The stories are there for you to taste. And you taste the goodness, and you taste what's not so good. How can you discern which is good and which is not so good? I'm going to use the concept of pornography from a legal perspective. The Supreme Court writes, I forget the man's name, but his wisdom is huge. What does he say? Pornography? I may not be able to define it, but I know it when I see it. Taste. And you will know what is not good for you. Well, how about all these people who don't think that pornography is bad? Are they wrong? They're wrong for me. Does that mean I need to stop? Does that mean I need to stay away from it? Does that mean I need to carve out the internet and never go there? The internet has much that is wisdom. It has much that I need to learn there. Taste and see that the Torah and the mitzvot are good. My taste and your taste are two different things. And that's the issue. I cannot open up your head and pour my life experience into your head. But more importantly, it would be better if you could pour your life experience into your children's head. But we cannot do that. We have to leave them to their life experiences, just as our parents left us to our life experiences. And when I say parents, I'm referring to my teachers as well as my biological parents. I'll continue to read. It is written in the Torah, in Parashat Nitzavim. See, I have set before thee this day life and good, and death and evil. This means that prior to the giving of the Torah, we had only death and evil before us. As our sages say, the wicked in their lives are called dead. This is because their death is better than their lives, as the pain and suffering that they endure for their sustenance is many times greater than the little pleasure they feel in this life. We all have heard the story of Rabbi Shimon having left the cave after 12 years and seeing a man toiling to make his living, toiling in the ground, plowing his field. He sees this man and the light from his eyes burns the man, and the man dies, God forbid. And a voice comes from heaven, Rabbi Shimon, return to the cave, because I did not create the world so that you would destroy it. What is it saying? What is the voice saying? You have to let people, each individual person, follow their path of growth, spiritual growth. And sometimes that will take physical growth. Sometimes that will take doing mundane tasks. But his mundane tasks is his Torah. But if you cannot see that, you're not ready to enter the world, Rabbi Shimon. And Rabbi Shimon returned to the cave for another year. Continuing. However, now we have been granted Torah and mitzvot. And by keeping it, we are rewarded with the real life, the joyful life, the delightful life. But it's joyful and delightful to its owner, as it is written, taste and see that the Lord is good. What do we mean, joyful and delightful to its owner? You cannot understand that statement till you have grandchildren. And I don't mean to abuse people who don't have children and therefore will never have grandchildren. We all have our own path. But to truly understand the word nachas, in Hebrew it's nachat, in Yiddish it's nachas, to understand it cannot be expressed, it can only be experienced. The experience of watching your little grandchild toddler as it begins its life with its interest, its joy, its desire to learn, and whatever else I could play to verbalize about my grandchildren. I bless you with, you have many. And if you don't have children and you don't have grandchildren, I bless you that you have many students, because they will give you the same pleasure that grandchildren are giving other people. Continuing to read. Taste and see that the Lord is good. Hence the writing says, see, I have set before thee this day life and good, which you did not have in reality at all prior to the gift of the Torah. Without the Torah, we can only be dead, God forbid. I can make that statement because I know the truth of that statement. I bless you that you receive that essence, that feeling of how good the Torah actually is for you. Continuing. However, not only does one who lives in Torah and mitzvot enjoy his own life, but he is even happy to bear children and bequeath them this good life. This is the meaning of that thou mayest live, thou and thy seed, for he receives additional pleasure in the life of his progeny, of which he was the cause. The pleasure of nachas, intellectually, is the pleasure of becoming a cause. My commentary. It has been 3,300 plus years since the Torah was given to the 70 nations. Yes, all 70 nations have had the gift of the Torah. All 3,300 years, the definition of life has not been clear. The definition of good has not been clear. And clearly the definition of this opposite words has not been clear. Every religion in the world has not even touched upon what Rabbi Ashlag says so easily. Before the Torah, there was no life and there was no good. Without the Torah and mitzvot, there is no good and there is no life. Contemplate these statements. Reread section 3. From this one, can you get a glimpse for the first time of the greatness of Rabbi Ashlag and also the importance in studying Torah and doing the mitzvot with the proper kavanah. We have reached the limit of our time this morning. We have to decide, is this a class you want to continue, that you want me to continue? We're only going to be studying it for a few weeks, and then we will move into the next section of the Hebrew calendar, the 3 negative weeks that starts on the 17th of Tammuz. We have 5-6 weeks of this open period, and we will continue to, I will continue to study the 10 luminous emanations. But I leave that up to my students as well. Just because I want to study this does not mean that you do. I am teaching a lot of material. And as some people have said, I don't have the time to absorb material. I don't have the time to intellectually understand the material. But you have the time to feel the material. You receive the energy by what you listen to. And if you miss a class, you receive the energy of the recording of that material. If you do not want to study this and wish to study something else on these Sunday mornings, and these Sunday mornings is the greatest number of students that come into our classes. So it's important as a teacher to teach what you want to know. What do you want to learn? The primary mission that I have is to explain Torah to explain the Zohar. And we do that 4 days a week. We could make it this class as well. I use that as an example. What would you like me to place in this class? Let me know, or next week we will continue with section 4. Shavua Tov, have a beautiful week. There will be a class at 3 o'clock West Coast time on advanced reincarnation. Tomorrow we have 3 classes. One is at 11 a.m. And that is the basic principles of Kabbalah, a review. We're delving into the binding by striking tool. At 4:30 West Coast time, we will go into our deep Zohar classes. And at 7 o'clock, the writings of the Ari, and sometimes other sages as well. Shavua Tov. I hope you have a beautiful week. Shalom Gadol. Shalom. Peace to all.
Shalom Gadol. Thank you, Hanok.
I didn't ask if there's any questions, and I hope there are. You're welcome to ask questions anytime. But if you don't have a question, just please come feel what we've spoken about today. And the question is, how can you feel what is words? How can you taste words to know if they're good or not? Which is the intention of the person speaking the words. Is his intention good or is his intention not good? Shavua Tov. Shalom to all.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Shalom.